Welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
And welcome back to another week, everyone. Actually, pretty packed considering everything has been going through. I don't know if you want me to kind of kick it off, but it's a pretty big one.
Is it? I mean, my biggest thing that I saw was the iPhone 15 officially announced. And I mean, they claim that it's able to do a lot of cool stuff hardware-wise, like play actual games like Assassin's Creed on the phone and not necessarily suffer the setbacks that mobile gaming has had since its inception.
It was pretty insane. Yeah, they mentioned Assassin's Creed Mirage, which Resident Evil 4 remake, I think, was another one that they mentioned. And those are new games. You know, there's a lot of hardware that's needed to even run it pretty solid on a computer, modern consoles. So it's very interesting that this is something that they're boasting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily just with the iPhone. It's been an initiative. We spoke about it briefly, where they're trying to make almost every platform that Apple has to incorporate gaming. A lot of developers have voiced their issues when trying to convert a game to run on Mac OS. And Apple has dedicated some resources on making that kind of conversion from whatever method that they're using to make it easier to streamline them into Mac operating system. And that was something that they boasted about on the last reveal before this one, when they were talking about the MacBook Air. And they were, again, showcasing how well can handle games. Like, this is something that they're dedicating time to, and they're always showing, hey, we're inventing something and it can play games. Like, that is something they're trying to pull in people from that crowd, because for the longest time, if you were a gamer, Mac was not your first thought ever. Like, not when it comes to gaming. Maybe if you were like designing a game for like the art stuff and the music parts and all like the creative aspects of gaming, sure. Yeah, maybe a Mac is the thing that you go for. But as a gamer, as a consumer, Mac was not the first choice. I mean, even today it still isn't. But it looks like Apple is trying to pull people in from the gaming world into that ecosystem.
They are definitely trying their darndest. I actually believe I just saw when I was researching stuff for last week that Baldur's Gate 3 is actually getting some macOS support in like the next couple months.
There you go.
So it's pretty insane. I mean, previously when someone told you that they were gaming on a Mac, it's because they were sitting on the tower. So this is pretty interesting to see the direction that they're heading and the accessibility that they're going to be offering. Because you can definitely filter some Steam searches to see if it's compatible with macOS, right? For sure. But
absolutely.
But who knows how, you know, what kind of updates those games have had. If the, you know, I know Apple OS's go by like names like Leopard, Lion, or whatever.
Oh my God, bro, that was like 10 years ago.
Okay, well, I don't own a Mac. I don't know what you want me to do.
I'm just saying. Yeah, I think they're on mountain ranges or lakes now. I don't know. They moved away from animals a while ago.
Jesus.
But okay. But yeah, no, that it's a thing. And what I find fascinating about it is the simple fact that the executive team at Apple is having meetings and having people collect data on what's the next avenue to bring in the best revenue. And clearly, they're not going to take time and resource to focus on gaming if they didn't think they were going to get a return on investment on this. So clearly, somewhere at Apple, it has been determined that if we can get gamers to jump on board, we will make more money, which I find interesting.
Definitely consulted Gabe Newell himself to confirm those theories. Yeah, man, it's interesting to see such a big player in the technological world, whether you like them or not. I think they're valued at what was it, $2 trillion, $3 trillion company, for something along those lines.
It's something. I remember they were the first to break a trillion. I don't know what they're at now.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see. I mean, that's all on iPhone chargers, but that's besides the point. It's
not
interesting
anymore.
It's interesting to see how such a big player is, after all these years, really surveying the the landscape of gaming as well, especially when they're mainly known for, like Tortuga mentioned, the more creative aspects of it, from photo editing, video creation. You have your Photoshops, your Adobe Premiere, basically all those Adobe products. While they are available on Windows as well, they're mainly known under Apple because that's mainly what you see a lot of creatives use in that aspect. So very curious to see on what the landscape for Mac OS and gaming have in store for us.
Absolutely. It's just something cool to think about. They're thinking about it, obviously, and it kind of makes you wonder why. We've said it before, gaming always seems to be what determines the way we go when it comes to technology. I mean, for the longest time, that's what determined what kind of hardware was even invented for computers, right? That type of processing power that went into CPUs, the type of processing power that went into GPUs, the performances of disk drives over to SSDs, things like that. There's always been an improvement, and it's always been to get more frames per second out of your PC. But because games are performing better on your PC, it also means that every other operation that your computer can do is going to also perform better, just because of the simple fact that you have more resources, you have more hardware, which means, your computer can actually do the things that you want it to do more often than not.
Exactly. And while we're kind of on the topic of computers and of processing and everything, there's been a massive uproar within the game development community. For those of you who are unaware, there's a development platform. We have Unreal Engine. I think some people even use like Blender. But another big player is Unity. And for those who are unaware, kind of out of the blue, Unity updated their new pricing scheme. And it is a doozy. So again, unannounced, Unity essentially announced a change to their pricing plan that's going to essentially charge developers each time someone installs the game after a certain revenue and installation thresholds are met. And now we're talking very, very popular games use this engine. We're looking at Genshin Impact, Vampire Survivors, Pokemon Go, Cuphead, Among Us, Subnautica, and even Hollow Knight. This particular change, which is set to take effect on January 1st, 2024, has legit, like, people are raging. So it'll essentially fall on the developers whether the game is even played or not. So if it's a free game anywhere that they're offering, subscription service, those costs are going to fall on the developer.
Oh, that's interesting. I did see this come up. But I didn't realize that even if the game was free to play, they were still going to charge people per install. Because now that makes me think, how does Steam handle that? How does Steam handle the free-to-play games? Are they not taking a cut because nothing is being sold? Maybe their cut is coming from what you purchase from in-game stores. I honestly don't know how Steam is handling that.
They probably handle it very similar, like 70-30, like just across the
board. Sure, from the store. But what if it's a complete free-to-play with no install of any kind? If it's just what an indie dude just said, hey, I'm just going to make this game free-to-play, have fun. It's a two-hour game. No store, no DLC, nothing. Just a quick 2-hour indie game.
That is interesting.
So,
your point.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see. I mean, maybe Steam requires you to have some kind of Play Store, some DLC or something of that sort in order to join. I honestly don't know if that's a requirement. So that's a very curious thing. This honestly reminds me of Wizards of the Coast when they made their change to the licensing to Dungeons and Dragons. It kind of gives me the same similar vibes. Like, hey, we're not making enough money, or we're making a lot of money and we want to make more, so we're going to make this change and take it out on you.
Yeah, and there's really a lot to kind of to dive into here. So for the most part, there's like a flat per install fee that it's that it's using, and it's going to get rid of any existing deals and make these changes retroactive. So
they're gonna backdate what they're owed for every install. That is insane, because Genshin Impact is a free to download, technically free to play game. It does have some sales, but that thing installed millions, right, of copies,
PC and mobile.
Yeah, I can't see that going through. Genshin Impact should be large enough to be able to lawyer up and get this taken down before it's enacted. This is crazy.
Yeah, so there are, again, a lot of things I kind of want to dive into here. So one of the biggest things on top of the making this change retroactive, which is going to supersede any existing agreements with Unity that developers have made anyway. So it applies to games that were released even before any of this happened. There's also the concern of gamers themselves. So what happens when a developer causes a change, maybe slow on some updates, and now instead of review bombing, they're mass installing, install bombing is the term that I've seen come across. So they can spoof multiple installs, maybe spoof an account to download it that way, to essentially hurt the developer's pockets. It's also going to call into question, charity bundles, Humble Bundle, things like Game Pass with large audiences. Like, as you saw, Game Pass actually just hit 30 million subscribers. So another milestone for Game Pass. But how are developers going to feel if they're going to get charged every time someone installs a game? Maybe they don't even play it. Maybe they think they're going to play it and then they just don't.
Well, let's use you and I as an example, right? As a social experiment. Do you install every game you ever purchase?
Yes.
Every single one? All 100 of them?
I at the time of purchase, I do, because I do very much intend to play it. 100%.
And I do not. I don't install it until I'm actually gearing up to play it.
Yeah, me too, which is immediately. And then until I can't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I don't. I'll purchase a game without the intent of playing it anytime soon. So in my scenario, Unity doesn't even get paid until I install the game 6 months later.
Right. And that's fine for those particular type of gamers. But the arrangement itself is still super, super shady, in my opinion. And
no, it is shady.
And there's very good reason for that.
But what I'm getting at is there are scenarios where Unity's getting shafted in a way, because not everyone installs immediately or at least for a very long time. So in some areas, Unity is shooting themselves in the foot with that kind of change. The retroactive part is insane. That part is wild. But changing the policy to go from when the game is purchased to when the game is installed, I feel like that's worse for them. Because if it goes from purchase, both of us will purchase, right? That's step one. But both of us do not install immediately after. So now, from just you and I, half the people are, they're losing out on sales for at least for a particular part of time. And there's like 80 plus games in my Steam library that I've never installed. Ever.
They're still going to get their money one way or another. Like, yeah, you may not have gotten it now, but they're still either the whatever Unity plan, because I think there are some different like tiers of Unity, if I'm not mistaken. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. But I do know the one that I did see pop up was actually the free one or the personal one, where that one, the threshold was actually really low too. It was like 200,000 in like a year. Comparing it to Unreal Engine's, was it $1 million before they start taking a cut? So it's 200,000 and 12 months for Unity is what they're calculating. But like I mentioned earlier, there is very good reason for this. So I know a lot of people are basically like, hey, what exactly is happening? And this is ultimately coming from their CEO, John Riccitiello. He is very, very infamous in the gaming community. He was actually a CEO of our good buddies over at EA for quite some time. So while he was CEO over there, he actually has a very infamous quote, said that developers who don't monetize their games are fucking idiots. And yeah, this guy, you know, wanted to monetize everything. One of the things that were rumored that were going around, that he wanted to charge every time you reloaded in Battlefield.
Mm.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember this.
Yep. So there's that's something that, I definitely wanted to touch base on, because it's like, I get that a lot of these developers, a lot of these companies, they're a business and they need to make money. But I feel like a change like this is ultimately going to hurt their pockets, like in the long run, because why would you want to sever the relationship with the developers who are going to use your product to sell, and then you're just going to shaft them and shaft the consumer as well?
So the biggest thing that I can tell that is coming away from this is that free-to-play is going to go away, especially if you use Unity. There's no upside to creating a free-to-play game now as a developer if you have to pay a fee every time that someone installs your free-to-play game. So that's 100% just going to go away. That's not going to exist unless someone just has deep enough pockets that they can just absorb that loss for a fun project that they're doing, which there might be one or two people on this planet that are probably doing that, right? If at all. So I do not see Unity being used for free-to-play games. So that means that other engines that are out there with way better tier systems are going to receive those developers. And a lot, that might also mean that a lot of games that are currently developed with Unity, if then this is only if this doesn't get reversed, because I have a feeling it will. There's enough backlash from the community on this. I'm pretty sure they're going to quote-unquote do the right thing and reverse this entire decision. This was just dumb from them to even begin with. But anyways, that people are going to move over to a new platform, right? And then to do that, they're going to cancel or erase, I guess, the Unity version. So that way they can't get tracked to owe Unity in the first place and move everything over to another engine. And that is a lot to do before January 1st. So yeah, it's crazy to say the least.
Yeah, crazy really doesn't begin to cut it, in my opinion. Another thing that's probably going to get thrown in the mix there, we actually just recently have been seeing a resurgence of game demos. Those are going to go away for sure. Yep. Which is a shame, because what generation would that be? Fifth gen? Fourth gen? Whatever it was with the OG Xbox, that's the last generation I remember with like game demos coming on like a disc.
I remember 360s, not with a disc, but you could download a quick demo.
Right, to play right. The game. There was like I know on PS1, PS2, and
oh, then you would get a demo disc.
Right, we had like multiple games on it, with multiple demos on it.
I remember that.
So that's going to be, you know, that went away for a while, and there was like a resurgence of it. So kind of sad to see that go away, because I think that's a much better system. I know it's a lot more work on the developers. I think that's a much better system than someone buying the game and then asking for a refund if they don't like it. So that's definitely unfortunate. So I don't know. I hope they kind of switch that, but
I think they will. If Unity wants to stay in business, because what's going to happen? Everyone's going to pull away from Unity because this change happened overnight without consulting the people that are using it. Right? No one likes that. And they're trying to make this change retroactive, which is slimy. It's one thing to announce that, hey, in the future, we're going to make this change. FYI, you know, heads up. But to say people that were forcing this upon you on retroactive sales, that's slimy. It's insane to even think of anyone doing that. Because think about it from just a consumer standpoint. Think about any bill that we have to pay monthly: water, electric, cell phone, any insurance. Insurance is a perfect example. Let's pretend an insurance company says, you know, we're now going to start calculating for this risk and charge you this much more because of this new thing that's happening. But we're going to retroactive this change for the last 3 years. So you're going to owe us the difference for 3 years.
So
wild.
As someone who is very familiar with insurance, I definitely have seen that happen.
With insurance.
Yeah, in case you
Pixel supports Unity confirmed.
No, I don't. I said I've seen it. But enough on this terrible, terrible change. Let's kind of switch directions here a little bit. I can't believe I'm saying this sentence, but there is currently an anniversary event going on in Grand Theft Auto 5 for its 10-year anniversary. There are a couple goodies that they're throwing in there, some clothes, some guns and stuff. You do have to log in to GTA Online. It is online only by September 27th. But that's something that's going on. We do have the Capcom gave us a little teaser on their lineup for the upcoming Tokyo Game Show. Looks like they are getting ready to discuss Resident Evil 4, Separate Ways. I think that's a DLC and the VR mode, an Ace Attorney trilogy, Street Fighter 6, Exo Primal, and Dragon's Dogma 2. And that is going to be for Thursday, September 21st. So be sure to tune into that. That's going to be interesting to see. We also have a release date for Final Fantasy VII Remake. This is a sequel to the 2021. So this is going to be called Rebirth. That is going to come out on PS5 on February 29th, 2024. I just realized they're doing it on leap year. That's super weird. But what's so they've confirmed you're looking at about 100 hours just to kind of complete the game. But what was very, very interesting is that they said that it's going to be exclusive until at least May 2024. So I hope they learn from their mistake of Final Fantasy VII Remake and don't make us wait like 3 years to get put on PC. So I think we'll be getting the PC version at the very least within a year, hopefully earlier, which is what I am hoping for.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff. So that's pretty cool. Do you know if Final Fantasy VII is PlayStation only again?
You're right. Yeah. So at launch, it's going to be PlayStation only. This particular series, the Final Fantasy VII Remake, yeah, it's PlayStation only.
So no timed release where everyone else gets it.
Right. There was actually a big thing that we discussed it on the podcast several episodes ago, where with the whole Microsoft FTC thing and Sony and all that good stuff, mm-hmm. where they came out and they paid Square Enix like an extra bajillion amount of money to make sure that it absolutely did not launch on Xbox.
Right. So, hate Sony once again. Sony's trash.
Which brings us to another article that came up. And the reason I want to bring this one up is because it, like, very rarely does a headline really annoy me like this. But the headline essentially is saying that Square Enix reportedly lost $2 billion after the release of Final Fantasy 16. And I'm really annoyed because if you dive into any article in regards to it, Final Fantasy 16 actually did phenomenal. It just didn't do enough to account for the losses that Square Enix endured for Forspoken, Babylon's Fall, Balan Wonderworld, and Marvel's Avengers. I think a lot of people forget that portion of it. So it's just something I want to bring up because, like, it's such a clickbaity headline, making it look like Final Fantasy 16 failed. And while it's a little more cinematic heavy than I would like it to be, it's still a very, very fun game. And it did well. Like they're planning DLC for it. So obviously, you know, you're not going to plan DLC for a game that's failing.
Right. Man. Yeah. Well, I mean, I will forever be salty. I hate that they do that. And it sucks to see Square Enix in the black at all. Wait, no, black is good. In the red at all. When it comes to their sales, because they are one of the best developers out there, right? Like their art style, at least in the Final Fantasy scene, is out of this world. I've always said that Square Enix was always able to show what the future of gaming would look like, because I'm thinking back of Final Fantasy 13 era, right? Like those graphics can still blow stuff out of the water today. And we're talking, and that game is almost, if not, no, I think it's more than 10 years old now, maybe 11 or 12 years old. And the graphics on that are still out of this world. And Final Fantasy 15 took it even further than that. I have no idea what 16 looks like, because once I found out it was part of the Xbox, I stopped caring about it. But I'm sure they put in the same amount of attention to detail and the level of work that they've done with all of their projects in the past to exceed what we're getting today as far as graphics and story goes.
No, man, it is a beautiful, beautiful game.
Like, I'm sure Square Enix is great at what they do, which is why I really hate that Sony blocks it from the rest of the world just to make their crappy console used. Because if not, it would be a paperweight, and everyone knows it. If Sony didn't have these exclusives, no one would play the PlayStation 5 or any of the PlayStations. And that's what kills me, that they do that, because they know no one would go to it, period. Maybe a super small handful of like the crazy fanboys. I believe it's the best thing in the world when it isn't. But people will realize they wouldn't buy it on the PlayStation. They can get it on anything else that'll perform better.
Yeah. And, you know, again, going back, like there are people who buy a PlayStation 5, like specifically, like exclusively for Call of Duty, right. Like in the millions. Like it is not a small number. So it is a shame, because ultimately the people who end up losing, and we've mentioned this time and time again, is the consumer, it's the gamer. Like, all we want to do is play these games, experience these worlds, and exclusivity is harming that. Like, I know that's why Todd Howard did it for Starfield, because they like it was being pitched to Sony, and Microsoft said no. Like, there's like enough is enough, essentially. Yeah. So
it's crazy, because this is how it started, right? When these platforms came out, the PlayStation and the Xbox, I think the PlayStation was first, and then Microsoft was like, whoa, this is a great idea. Let's make something that plays games. And out came this big ass machine. Right. If I remember, the PlayStation was first for a couple of years, maybe 2 years.
90, no, it was more like PlayStation 1 was like 95.
Right. So the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 were the ones that went neck and neck.
Those were neck and neck.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. Time. But still, so that was always the case. But we're talking about the early 2000s at this point, where the concept, you know, developers didn't have that kind of technology and resources to make their games work on both platforms. So that was an understandable time to say, we're only going to make this game for the PlayStation, or we're only going to make this game for the Xbox, or we're only going to make this game for the PC. What the hell is a PlayStation or an Xbox, right? That was this beginning point when PlayStation and Xbox became rivals. So exclusivity at that time made perfect sense. Developers couldn't make a copy for both consoles and the PlayStation, I mean, and the PC. It just wasn't feasible. But technology evolved 100-fold since then, and the gap has closed immensely, to the point where we now even have crossplay in a lot of games on all systems, right? That's how much of the technology, that gap has closed. And yet we're still tying things up as exclusive. It's so stupid.
It is, and it's just nonsensical. Like at some point it becomes annoying. And then it's even more annoying when you go online, you're trying to do some research or just trying to enjoy yourself, and you end up coming across some dumbass console war. Mine's better because of this, mine's better because of that. It's like you're just doing harm to yourself. Like,
yeah.
Like ultimately the whole point is to enjoy yourself, like for whatever, whether you want a single player game, whether you want to test your skills and you only play multiplayer rank, like whatever the case, like we should all be unifying to end all of this. Because
agreed.
why do I have to only play you know, Final Fantasy on the PlayStation, or wait for it to one day potentially fall under Steam?
Right.
You know, like one of the greatest features that Xbox ever put out was the Xbox Play Anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing technology.
To be honest, I'm glad you brought that up, because I've had this idea for a while. It would be, I would go as far to accept a PlayStation Sony only IP game exclusivity, whatever you want to call it, if they included it with like a PlayStation store on PC where I need a Sony account to buy it from the Sony store and install it on my PC, and they still get 100% of that revenue, I don't care about that. Just the fact that I would have access to it, I would make me be able to play those games. I would still be all for that. And Sony still gets their monopoly on these three IPs that they refuse to let go. Like, even something like that, I'm open to. Right.
Because if you take a look at their more recent thing, and I think this has to be with their CEO, Jim Ryan, is, you know, he's so adamant about making sure these games do not launch on PC day one. Because he wants the PlayStation sales, right? And obviously, yeah, that's kind of inflated. There's no way around that. But even when they do launch, like, let's see, God of War 2018, I think launched on Steam 2021, 2022, something along those lines. And it was $50. So, you know, that's back when things were still $60 games. But it's like a $10 discount on like a 3-year-old game. Like, is that really, you know, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, God of War 2018 is absolutely fantastic. You would love it. Like, you would absolutely love it.
I know.
But at those prices, like, you definitely, after that time frame, there's definitely going to be a decrease in that value. There's no way you're paying that much, you know, four years down the line.
And that's honestly why I'm still waiting for New Horizons to drop in price. It's an old IP that's finally now available on PC, and it's another title that I've had my eyes on for the longest time because it looked fantastic. The story looked original. The world looked interesting, and the graphics are out of this world. And I, you know, that's a very good trifecta of things to have. But the price is still full price for a game that's almost 10 years old. So not going to be me.
I have no idea what that game is.
New Horizons?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I might be thinking of the side title. Time to Googly it. It's the one with the chick archer with the tech kind of tech hunter Horizon world.
Horizon New
Zero Dawn?
Yeah, that's the one.
There we go. Words. But yeah. Yep, that one. That's the game. Not New Horizons.
Right now, even with the DLC right now, which I don't even remember the DLC, they still want $50 for it.
Yeah. So I'm waiting for that to hit around the $20 range, $15 range before I buy it, because it's an older title. Sorry, 2017. Not entirely 10 years. I was off by 4. But still a very dated game. But it looked great when it came out, but it was a PlayStation exclusive for the longest time. So that's one that I had my eye on that I wouldn't mind playing. And I'm glad it's on Steam now. I am. But they're asking for way too much.
They are. Like, it's the same thing with the Spider-Man game. Like, that one was also Skyrim. Todd Howard's waddling with
the fact that Skyrim hit $70 on Switch is wild. Wild, insane. Nothing changed. Same game on the most inferior platform that we have. $70,
dude. Speaking of, bro. So Mortal Kombat 1 just released, and it is gorgeous. But people haven't put like there. It also got a Switch version, and it is bad. It looks so bad.
It's only temporary, bro, because that Switch 2 is gonna knock things out of the water.
That Switch 2 is definitely going to do something. And while we're on the Switch, we also did get a little Nintendo Direct a couple days ago, which had some pretty good stuff. There were honestly only two things that came out that I personally cared about. That's what I'm going to be talking about today. First and foremost is we have another Paper Mario game coming to the Switch. But this is the one from the Nintendo GameCube. So we are getting Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, and it's getting a remaster for the Switch. So very, very excited about that. For those of you who haven't played Paper Mario, it's really just an RPG version of Mario. And it's very good. I played the first one on the Nintendo 64. Then they got another one on the GameCube and another one on the Switch. Paper Mario is definitely a series I feel should have a couple more games because of how fun it is. From the combat to how they try to put some sort of gimmick in there, like the combat and the latest one for the Switch, the Origami King. So fun. Like each boss fight was like a completely different mechanic and it was really, really good.
That's cool.
And then we also are getting the full, wow, we got some trailer highlights and some new mechanics for Super Mario RPG remake. So this was an RPG game. We're talking like original Final Fantasy, Chrono Trigger, Super Nintendo era. And it's getting a full remake. And we're getting that in, I think it was fall. Don't quote me. Pretty sure we did get a release date.
One thing that came from the director that I wasn't even aware of was there's an entire game dedicated around Peach that's coming out in March of 2024.
Yep, and the Super Mario RPG remake is coming on November 17th.
Oh, that's very soon.
Yeah, yep. So I actually totally forgot to see if we got one for... So the Paper Mario, that's not coming till 2024. So we are going to have to wait for that one. But for the Super Mario RPG remake, that's coming November 17th.
Very soon. Well, yeah, a lot of things around Mario. They're even getting, I saw a thing with Mario and Donkey Kong, kind of like a remake for the Switch that's coming out early next year too.
It's going to be in that fashion of Mario's debut, actually. I think that was Mario's debut, which is Donkey Kong, where you try to go up the ladder and save the princess.
Jumping over battles and stuff.
Yeah, so it's doing something along those lines. And that's not even touching on Super Mario Wonderland. Is that what it's called? The new 2D Mario, which is, I don't think it was at the direct. It was announced, I think, separately a little while back. But it's a 2D Mario. They showed like Mario as an elephant riding poor Yoshi. That was rough to watch. But it's just a 2D Mario. And it is so colorful and really want to see how they innovate this particular Mario game.
Interesting. A lot of stuff around Mario clearly kind of cashing in on this Mario movie and all the interest that I'm sure that pulled in for Nintendo. I have no doubt that this was the plan all along after the release of that movie, knowing it was going to be a huge hit. I even think I heard rumors that they're already working on a Super Mario 2. Nothing official, but I remember seeing something very obscured, nothing confirmable, obviously, for that. But I wouldn't be surprised that they're already trying to get that in the works. Let's not let up steam on free money, I'm sure is the motto.
That's basically it. There's no way they're going to let that go, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Plus, Chris Pratt doesn't even have to act. All he has to do is talk. Easy, bro. Anyways, that's my salt for that. I wanted to talk about something that popped up randomly regarding Beyond Good and Evil. Not good at Beyond Good and Evil 2, the original Beyond Good and Evil. So apparently there was a quick screen grab as they accidentally revealed the ESRB of Beyond Good and Evil 1, original, 20th anniversary edition. And yeah, it was just a quick little grab on, forgot what site, but basically it was just announcing that this was going to come out as, I don't remember what it was. The point is, they're working more on this remaster than they are on Beyond Good and Evil 2, which is wild to me.
And Beyond Good and Evil 2 has gone through so much. It's honestly kind of sad to see, because that game looked complete in 2018, and here we are in 2023. And it's just, it's crickets. Like, all we hear is either creative directors leaving, lead writers going away, or dying. And that's not even to touch base on what Ubisoft is going through currently. I guess a couple months ago, Ubisoft basically put something out that everyone's going to be permanently work from home remote. And the past couple weeks, they basically were forced everyone back to office. And we're looking at people who like bought new cars, bought new homes in like other cities, who now have to commute to Ubisoft building. So those employees are not happy. And it stems from what we mentioned a long time ago where the CEO basically said that the success of the company falls under the employees. I was like, it's definitely not true. It all falls on management. We are here following your direction.
Right.
So any failure is definitely going to fall under your direction.
100% true. And it does suck because when everyone was told, you know, you can be remote, we're not going to go back to the office and it's your choice, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that came down from corporate across all industries. A lot of people, like you said, sold their homes, moved into more rural areas where the cost of living is a lot cheaper, yet still making their city paychecks, you know, and now to do the reverse in this housing market, it's a really crappy thing for a lot of people across the board. And it's not just gaming in general. Every industry kind of fell for this trap. So it sucks to see this happening across, because it's killing the working class, all these people, all these employees. But like you said, management isn't going to bat an eye. Those people that can't come back because they can't make ends meet now or get a place to live, because I'm sure those areas now, the prices for those homes have skyrocketed, especially now with all these industries trying to move back to these major cities again. It's going to be a challenge. And those that can't make it are just going to get cut. And Ubisoft and all industries, they're just going to rehire and fill that positions back. So really crappy. That's going to slow things down immensely now across the board. But yeah, it's just something that I saw pop up regarding Beyond Good and Evil. It's funny that they got a ESRB, just a blooper for the 20th anniversary of the original, and not a word about Beyond Good and Evil 2. And at this point, I really wish they would just come out and say, this project is next. We're sorry we wasted your time. Something to let us know, to give up hope.
And then just let us play the demo and we'll fix it for you.
Yeah, give us that 1% reveal that you showed in 2018 and I'd be content. I just want to fly from the ground to space one time and then I'll uninstall it.
And one last thing while we are on Ubisoft. I think I mentioned like the last episode or the episode before where Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag was mysteriously taken off of the storefront.
Yeah, for Steam. Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah.
Yep. So unfortunately, it's not. It's a very lackluster reason. They did reach out to PC Games N and confirmed that they removed it because there was a technical issue with the game. However, there is no current estimate as to when it is going to be resolved and brought back.
Issue is called Scorn and Bones, and we want people to buy that instead.
Crying. But I don't doubt it at all. I don't doubt that. If that ultimately turns out to be the reason, you heard it here first.
Right? The amount of things we've announced here first that came to be is astonishing. We should keep track. But yeah, no, it's the exact same game without the assassinating part, just the ship's part. And I'm sure they don't want people to say, well, why would I do that when I can just get Black Flag for much cheaper? Blah, 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 all that good stuff. It forces people that want to have a ship battle type game that's not battleships to be Skull and Bones as their preferred ship pirate type thing. If that's your thing, I don't think I will ever look at that game twice. I honestly only talk about it to bash Ubisoft with how much of a copy it is from Black Flag. But other than that, I do not care for Skull and Bones.
The only reason I would even touch anything along those lines is if I can get my original Xbox 360 save file. And that's the only way I'm going to jump back in those on that ship.
Like, there's that's just funny. No reason.
Well, I don't have anything else, but since we are here, just a friendly reminder. So we did just have the recent release of Mortal Kombat 1. We have Lies of P coming out on September 19th. The Souls-like Pinocchio game.
Isn't it Life of Pi?
No, that's the movie. It's Lies of P. And then we have Payday 3 coming out September 21st, which actually is, just a minor footnote. But the developers of Payday 3, like, removed Denuvo from the game, like, out of nowhere.
Removed what?
That's very interesting. Denuvo, it's kind of one of those anti-crack things.
Like an anti-cheat, anti-crack kind of thing?
Yeah, technology. And it's, like, one of the hardest ones. Like, I mean, it's definitely crackable. I've seen it. But they just removed it, like, entirely from the game.
Of two?
Of three.
With the new of one. Three?
Yeah.
Maybe it's being replaced with something else. I can't imagine that they would release it without some kind of anti-anything.
I don't know. There's really no... It's not like there's a rank thing in the game, you know? Like, cheats are definitely available.
Sure.
If you look hard enough.
But, I mean, yeah. But it is... they're still online. You can still play with randos. Maybe they are going to include a rank thing. I don't know. There's no way that they're not going to... Or it's costing too much and they're like, it's not worth the cost anymore. I don't know. Interesting.
Maybe. Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty expansion comes out September 26th. And then I think this is their fighting game. Correct me if I'm wrong. The EA Sports FC 2024. I'm pretty sure that's Fight Club. Or is that the soccer game?
Or is that Football Club?
Maybe it is Football Club. I think that's the one we were talking about with books. But that comes out September 29th, if that's your thing, because EA, a multi-billion dollar company, did not want to pay for the FIFA license.
I don't know if that was the case. I think FIFA was asking for a shit ton this go around.
Yeah, they didn't want to pay. They didn't want to pay. I think FIFA wanted like a billion.
Yeah. Sorry. EA didn't want to get extorted. Horrible choice from EA. But I think it went from that to an exorbitant amount to also the fact that I think FIFA wanted to give the license to another dev. I don't think it's gone forever, if I remember right. It's just not going to go to EA, which I think is great because all EA did was copy the last freaking version anyways.
Bro, remember there was, I forgot what FIFA game it was. I don't remember.
19-20. I love telling this story.
In the stands?
Yes. Where FIFA 20 came out and the banners in the stadiums still said FIFA 19 on them. So EA is garbage. FIFA is garbage on EA. So maybe another dev can make this a better IP. But man, when I saw that, and I've said it for years, all it is an updated roster. You're paying $60.70 for an updated roster that is easily just free, could be free easily because it's a roster change, or as a small DLC just to get the latest roster, the same way we have to get the latest maps to play Call of Duty online. And if you don't have the same maps, you can't play with those people. Same thing could be done with that version of FIFA. If you don't have the same rosters, then you can't play versus each other. You can only play people that has also purchased the latest rosters. You know, such an annoying way to operate.
My man, we can't even do that with Baldur's Gate. We can't even play multiplayer with one version off. Like, why can't EA do that?
They can. They just rather charge $70 for it. And we have millions of people that are dumb enough to actually do it. Instead of saying, why are we doing this when you can make this a DLC? If the consumers stopped doing it, if literally at least even half stopped, just say, we're not going to buy this year's version until you stop doing this stupid thing, this ludicrous thing. EA will listen because you literally just cut half of their bottom line when it comes to FIFA. And they were like, maybe we should stop doing this. But people kept doing it because this is the way it is. But yeah, anyways, that's that rant. I have some announcements, or one announcement to make, which I think is pretty neat. And you're going to enjoy this a little bit. I think it's around D&D, Dungeons and Dragons.
Hit me.
New book is coming out, basically a new adventure, but it's evolved from an old adventure, which is why I love this. So you and I have played this, and so have millions of other people. Lost Mines of Phandelver. Remember that?
Yes.
So the Lost Mines of Phandelver, which has become basically Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition's best starter adventure. Essentially, it's designed in a way that you could have never played D&D. You could have never played any tabletop of any kind. Hold on. Annoying. You could have never played any tabletop of any kind, and it's written in such a way where it guides the dungeon master, gives like kind of why things are the way they are, kind of things to expect from your players and how to handle it. Those kinds of guidelines, which are very useful as a brand new DM, especially with Dungeons and Dragons, where the players can do basically anything and just throw things at you that you didn't expect, and now you have to react to it accordingly. Anyways, that's Lost Mines of Phandelver. It's designed to go from level 1 to level 5. And then, and it's a very, very short adventure. So now they have made Phandelver and below the Shattered Obelisk. Basically, it still starts at Lost Mine of Phandelver, essentially the exact same adventures with the same, I think, three or four acts from that adventure. And then once that's completed, they've thrown little nuggets in the in this new iteration of Lost Mine of Phandelver. They've thrown little nuggets that kind of foreshadow this weird change with like otherworldly beings, right? And you discover things that's happening over the world, and that's going to actually affect Phandelver and then the rest of Faerun. And then it goes from ending it at level 5 like before, all the way up to level 12, handling these new otherworldly challenges that you discovered slowly in the Lost Mine of Phandelver. So I think, from what I've seen, I think it was done beautifully. And they, in this adventure, they've gone back to the old style of providing actual material in the for DMs to use, like fully color maps instead of just black and white maps with barely any details, fully written out rooms and descriptions, more NPCs and personality traits and kind of like quirks and quips to kind of like help make them be unique and interesting as NPCs, because it's very difficult to kind of like do that on the fly. You just know that there's a shopkeep and that this is their name and this is their race and that's it. And then you kind of have to make them unique and not just some one-time encounter kind of thing. So they've included so much now in this book for DMs to make it easier for them and the group to kind of have a better experience. And that has dropping off. It used to be like that in a lot of books, and then it dropped off for the last two or three most recent adventures. And it looks like it's finally coming back. They're finally listening to people saying, hey, these are the things we want in these books. We don't care about all these other crazy things. We want stuff that DMs can actually use. And it looks like they're finally listening. So I love to see it, and I love to see it applied to a much-loved adventure that is the Lost Mines of Phandelver, into this new adventure, Phandelver and Below. So anyways, I thought you'd enjoy that. I sure did.
Yeah, no, that is pretty good. And I'm glad to see that that the DMs are also getting some love.
Absolutely, because I mean, it's the DMs that are the only ones that are able to read this. So that's the thing. So I love the fact that they included more artwork for NPCs, even if they're one-off NPCs. There's actual artwork that you can show people at the table, people online, instead of trying to describe them. Because like I said, all you have is a name, a place, and a race. And you have to, you know, give more description of these characters that isn't written down. It just comes off the top of your head. But now they're taking that burden off of the DMs and are actually including that into the book, so the DMs can focus on other things and other aspects of world building and character linkage to the story and things like that. So like I said, I'm enjoying that. I might make this my next adventure. I can't even tell you what the other ones even were, because I just skipped them entirely. I think this is going to be the next adventure that I invest in.
Well, that's good to hear, especially with a lot of the goodwill that Wizards of the Coast had lost with Dungeons & Dragons 1. Is that what the license is called?
Kind of. That was the placeholder. Yeah, I don't think they're doing that anymore. I forgot what they were doing. I think they're naming it by year now. Instead of editions, is just the year. So it'll be Dungeons & Dragons 2024, 25, so on and so forth. Instead of D&D 1, which I liked D&D 1. I kind of hope that they go back to that. But I guess a lot of people...
With versions. Oh, well, with the year.
With the year. But I kind of like... I like the... I don't know. I can see an argument for both. But I like that there's one source for Dungeons & Dragons that is constantly evolving and changing, as opposed to waiting for an errata, which a lot of people don't even keep up with erratas because it's just a separate thing that happens. Once you buy the physical book, that's it. What's printed on there, that's what you go by. You're not going to go and check to see if things were updated 3 years later for something that was written, you know? So, but with D&D 1, it's focused more on like the digital side of it, where every time that changes happen to a rule, to a spell, to even a monster, right? You can change a stat of a monster. It's all covered in D&D 1. And D&D Beyond handles that pretty well. I think there's been some areas where they'll update things, but you can still see the old information also still included in the digital books or monsters or what have you. But anyways, yeah, D&D 1 was a placeholder, but yeah, I think they're going, instead of 5e, 6e, they're going to start doing D&D and then the year, which I don't, I think they should just do 6e, 7e, so on and so forth, if they're going to do that anyways.
All right. I don't have anything much. There's some headlines, honestly. There's some rumors of Intel's 14th CPU is going to come out in a couple weeks. A couple of experts are saying that we're going to see a resurgence of external GPU because of how of the bandwidth on Thunderbolt 5, which is very, very interesting to hear. Tertug and I saw something that I had sent them. But there's we saw a Twitch streamer who was playing Halo using mind control in her eyes. And that was super fun to watch.
Yeah, that was actually insane. Elon Musk does it again. No, but seriously, that's an insane feat to be able to create. I don't even know how they did like that Neuralink controller thing where they, but, and it also makes you wonder if that becomes the norm or even accepted in the gaming scene, how that would affect competitiveness. Because you would assume that your mind would be faster than your fingers as far as reaction goes, right? So would that be considered cheating at that point? So it'd be an interesting kind of topic of discussion if that starts to be more widely adopted in the gaming world.
Indeed. So super shout out to streamer Perry Chiral. I'm definitely probably pronouncing that wrong. But go check out her channel. And that's going to be PerriKarYal.
Yeah, I don't think you pronounced that right. I don't know how you would even pronounce that. I understood each letter individually.
Facts. That's going to be it for me, bro.
Same Z's. I don't think I have anything else. Just checking my notes one last time. No, that's absolutely it. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and sign us out. Definitely thank all of you guys for hanging out with us yet another week. Definitely check our link in the description below for all of our other content that's out there. Reach out to us on Twitter at @2guys1level. Let us know what you thought of this episode, any previous episodes, and what you would like for us to discuss in any future episodes. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us, and we will catch you all next time. Until then.